And then I realized, wow, you know, if I had a mission in place of who we are and what we do, that would really give us a central rallying cry to really form and focus ourselves around. And it would also, quite frankly, help me better explain to others across the business who aren't familiar with us what purpose we serve and the value that we bring. And so during this time, I pulled the whole team together and we wrote a mission statement and a vision statement. And it was really important that I included the team in that conversation because it wasn't just my orders from on high as the boss, me telling them who we are. It was all of us coming together and forming that identity together as a team. And I wanted every member of the team to be equally empowered in having that voice and defining who we are and where we're going.
Hello and welcome to the Leadership Launchpad, where we help managers improve themselves, their teams, and their organizations. On this show, I talk with industry leaders, coaches, authors, and experts to give you actionable insights that will help improve your own performance and the performance of those around you. Our guest today is Laurel Schulard. Laurel is the Senior Director of Learning Experience at SAP Concur. She holds an MSCD in Learning Design and Technology from Purdue University and a BA in Education from Eastern Michigan University. Laurel wrote the June 2023 TD at Work guide titled A-List L&D Team Assemble, earned the Master Performance Consultant Certificate through ATD, has presented at the ATD International Conference for 4 years running, and at the 2021 DevLearn Conference. This discussion is really a deep dive into why leaders like you should take the time to set a mission and vision for their team. I know we have touched on this topic before, specifically in the episode with Holly Betke, but that was really just one of several topics that we covered. And so in the show today, we really get into the weeds. You should expect to learn how a mission and vision can really help your team get better known across the business, why you should take advantage of times of change inside your organization, how to get alignment on the vision between your team and your boss, and so much more. Before we get into the discussion, I would like to remind you that if you are enjoying this show, one of the best ways you can help support us is by, you know, liking or rating the show. It really helps the reach, and I cannot tell you how much it means to me. If you can just take a few moments, it would really, really help. And with that, let's get into the discussion with Laurel Schulard. Laurel, welcome to the Leadership Launchpad. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me here.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to chat. We first connected, what is it, 2 weeks ago now? And I'm really looking forward to this conversation because of kind of what we're going to focus on, right? And I think, you know, you work at SAP in the tech sector, in kind of all kinds of workplaces. There's a lot of change happening right now. Lots of restructuring, lots of people finding all of a sudden they're part of a different team, or their team gets condensed, or they're changing, you know, they're restructuring and might have, some new mandate for their team. And in our discussion a couple of weeks ago, one of the things that we decided we wanted to focus on is this idea of how, in times of high change, how do you even figure out what your team does? Which maybe isn't something that ever some people take it for granted, but I think it can taking it for granted is a mistake, and there can be a really big challenge there. So what has been your experience with that? How do you figure out what your team does?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So first, I always try and think about what is the unique purpose that my team serves? And so we're part of a wider department. We're part of a line of business within the SAP ecosystem. You know, SAP makes up over 100,000 employees globally. So quite frankly, you know, what is my team's purpose? What's the point, you know, for those of us in my team to exist? And what it's always come down to as we've gone through several organizational changes over the years is we have always been the sole L&D, the sole learning and development practitioners, serving the audience that we're tied to. It's our responsibility to make sure that they are properly onboarded, that they receive proper ongoing training, and they're equipped to succeed in their roles. That's our purpose. You know, what it really boils down to is that one word answer is training. And I can get a lot fancier about kind of the magic of how we do our craft and we align to business goals and all of that. But, you know, really understanding our mission of why we exist, you know, why the company has us there doing this work. That's really step one. So having that mission. And then we elevate to the vision. Where are we trying to go? What are our aspirations as an organization?
Got it. So some of that mission and vision work, how much of that was internal versus you like syncing with your boss or your boss's boss? Like, how did you draw that connection between your team and again, like you said, the rest of the organization?
Yeah, it's a great question. So a little bit of both, honestly. And so I became the manager of this team about 4.5 years ago. I had been a member of the team previously. And when I became the manager, we didn't have a mission and vision in place. And a lot of teams don't.
Yeah.
And what I realized is, as I was going out and meeting with our vested partners and stakeholders across the business, a lot of people didn't know my team existed. And so I was constantly finding myself in this position of doing these awkward elevator pitches of saying who we are. So I got a lot of practice right out the gate. Of just refining that message of who my team is, how we can better serve the business, how we can better partner with people across the business. And then I realized, wow, you know, if I had a mission in place, I wouldn't necessarily go recite that to anyone verbatim, but if we had those words on a wall, you know, on a SharePoint page, on a hub somewhere, if we had those words defined of who we are and what we do, that would really give us a central rallying cry to really form and focus ourselves around. And it would also, quite frankly, help me better explain to others across the business who aren't familiar with us what purpose we serve and the value that we bring. And so part of it was absolutely, you know, me driving that. Once I'd been in seat as a manager for probably about 8 or 9 months, we held a series of team workshops to really rebrand ourselves. We actually changed our team name during this time. We changed people's job titles and job descriptions during this time. And so it was, this was also 2020. It didn't have very much to do with COVID, but I mean, the air was ripe with change that year. There's a lot of people questioning all the things. And so if we were ever going to do it, it felt like the right time. And so during this time, I pulled the whole team together and we wrote a mission statement and a vision statement. This was all virtual because again, 2020, but I pulled us all together. We did it virtually on some online whiteboard tools and a series of virtual team meetings. And it was really important that I included the team in that conversation because it wasn't just my orders from on high as the boss, me telling them who we are. It was all of us coming together and forming that identity together as a team. And I wanted every member of the team to be equally empowered in having that voice and defining who we are and where we're going.
Okay. So you started off internally. I love how you bring up this idea of making it a very inclusive kind of co-creation experience. Cause I think that's one thing that often comes up is especially new leaders feel like it's on them. Like they should be coming up and being like, this is what we do. Did you, as a new leader of the team, you were part of the team, you became a member of the team. You said you were leading it for 8 or 9 months. Was there any, did you have a challenge with that of feeling like, especially when you started this process, feeling like you should have the answer to this? Was that a challenge for you at all?
So yes and no. You know, I think every leader has that bit of imposter syndrome, especially when you're new in the role, especially when it's your first leadership role of, oh my gosh, all of a sudden people are listening to me and looking at me differently. And all of a sudden in those group conversations, I'm the voice that when I start talking, everyone else stops talking. And I better make sure I have something good to say that's worth everyone else stopping talking so they can listen to me. Yeah. And so I definitely had some of that just thought process of, wow, you know, I really need to have the vision to drive the team. And I did, but I wanted buy-in from all of them. And I need buy-in from all of them. I also had the opportunity within my first year and the role. So by the time we were doing this mission and vision exercise, I'd also had the opportunity to hire quite a few new people onto the team. We had some new headcount. We had had some turnover before I came on board as the manager. Yeah. And I hired some really, really talented individuals. And I hired them very intentionally because they had skills and they had experience and just diversity of thought that we didn't previously have on this team. And so I really wanted the new folks, quite frankly, to come in and have the impact that was the promise they sold to me going through the interview process. I was really excited about the new skills and the new energy that they were bringing. And so I wanted them to have an input in shaping this new identity of who we were together.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you had kind of a vision, but you wanted to, you know, get buy-in from it. What was your role then? I want to get kind of in the weeds for a minute to help people who have never gone through a process like this.
Yeah.
What was your role in curating, navigating that discussion of bringing in these ideas, but also, I don't know, I guess, yeah, where did you find that difference between just eventually ending up where you wanted to end up anyway? You're just kind of bringing it there versus like truly including these ideas and steering the course with that inclusion.
So I actually, before I came into corporate L&D, I began my career as a high school English teacher. And one of the first things I did as the manager of this team is I held a book club. And so we chose a book. It was Agile for Instructional Designers by Megan Torrance. We had budget at that point. So everyone on the team got a copy funded for them. And this was a really low cost and really fun and engaging way for us to start these conversations. And so, you know, I saw, in answer to your question, I saw my role as the conversation facilitator. I didn't want to be the sage on the stage telling everyone, here's what we do. I went back to that English teacher method of let's all read something, let's come together and talk about it, and what life lessons can we draw from this. And so as we were going through that book, Agile for Instructional Designers, we pulled out several chapters that were really important for us in sort of reframing the work that we do. And so one was the importance of doing action mapping, really making sure that we're aligning the assets that we create with business goals and really action-oriented learning. There's a whole chapter on having project retrospectives and how you end a project and how it's really important to hold those retrospectives even if a project goes well, and also if the project goes poorly. And so we had 8 or 9 meetings before we even got to the mission and vision. And what I realized is as we are having these book club conversations and as we are having these big theoretical discussions about what are we doing now? What's the work that we all aspire to? I realized mission and vision was like tip of my tongue the whole entire time, as was a new team name. And so we ended up putting a few meetings following the book club where we actually talked about, okay, so we've had all these discussions, we have all these ideas, how do we put this in play? We really need to wrap this around a central mission, and we really need to wrap this around the vision for where are we going? Because our work isn't going to be done evolving as a team, and certainly the business is not done evolving around us. And so what is that vision for that future state? Funny enough, at the start of this very conversation, you mentioned reorganizations. My team's gone through a couple of reorgs, as have most people in corporate settings today. But we're actually at a point now, here we are coming up on around the 4-year anniversary of that original mission and vision. And I think it's really time for us to revisit those. We see them as our North Star. They guide us throughout the year, but they're never carved in stone because they really can and have to evolve over time. And I think now, 4 years later, the org has evolved enough around us. It's really time for us to craft a new mission and vision.
Yeah. I love what you said there about kind of you used the book club to kind of set the context or get the ball rolling. Because I think that is something that everybody needs to be prepared for if you want to do any of this work on a team. For most people on your team, chances are it's the first time they've ever done it. They're not in a like headspace to think about it. And like, what do we do? What do you mean? What do? I come in, you tell me what to do. I do the work. I go home. Like, I don't know. And so having a bit of discussion or a bit of time and space to kind of prep people and say like, hey, this is what we're going to be talking about. I can see that being really impactful. You mentioned this idea of, you know, going through the reorgs and the kind of organization has changed enough. To me, the thing that comes to my mind there is what are you looking at out in the organization? Because I guess kind of when it comes to mission and vision, like you're changing what you say you do. Does that sound right?
Yes. You know, and some of that is honestly responding to organizational change. My team has been picked up and wholesale lifted and shifted and placed somewhere new in the organization. Yeah. So we now have the new audience of learners that we're supporting. And so those exact same conversations that I had 4 years ago around, hey, everyone, here's my team. Here's the work we do. Here's the value we bring. Here's how we can partner you. Here's how we actually help bring your vision into reality. I'm now having those conversations with a whole new set of partners in a different part of the business.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're looking around you, looking at kind of your suppliers, your customers, and seeing what new relationships we need to create. Is there a matter of deciding yes or no on certain things? Like, are there things that you're looking at and being like, we're not going to do that anymore?
Honestly, yes. You know, I think one really great benefit that comes of having a reorganization is we get to pivot a little bit. And so I go back to that elevator pitch, you know, when I think about how I describe the value proposition that my team brings to our partners across the business, I'm making sure that I'm hitting the notes and hitting the elements that are things we really want to focus on. One thing my team has really explored in earnest in the last year is performance consulting. We actually had several members of my team went through the Association for Talent Development and got certified in performance consulting. And that is a clear value that we can bring to this new organization that we now sit in. This isn't work they've previously had people doing. And so, you know, all of these things, it's really summoning on us to change, but this is positive change. And this is change that we're really excited about. And it's allowing us to really play to our strengths. And I don't want to keep harping on mission, vision, but really having those two things in place has helped me have these conversations very productively. It's helped with everything from making sure we're staying in scope to things that really play to our strengths. It's really helped with making sure that when we do recruiting, we're recruiting people onto the team who have the skills that are going to help us bring that vision into reality as we do evolve over time. And it's really helped make our value proposition clear to the stakeholders who aren't as familiar with us or don't really understand the full value that L&D can bring.
Yeah, it's aligning expectations for sure.
Yes.
Is really what it comes down to. And so let's switch the conversation then, because you kind of just mentioned it. So a lot of what we've been talking about is internally, you know, you're like aligning internally to what you want to do. Let's start with, like, I kind of briefly asked this question, your boss, you know, so you say like, hey, this is what we want to do. Performance consulting is an example. You have I'm assuming, you know, you're in a new part of the organization now. Maybe you have a new boss. Your team is like really excited. Hey, we want to bring performance consulting as this brand new skill to the organization. How do you sell that to the people above you so that this isn't just an internal thing, but truly this alignment of expectations is both directions?
Something I realized really early on as the leader is whenever you're trying to advance yourself, advance your team, you always want to make it really clear that your vision is actually their vision. Your vision supports their vision. And so think about, you know, the business goals, you know, what are the actual business goals at this time? And I'm not just doing this work because it's interesting to us or we think it's fun. We're doing this work because this will help them attain their business goals and their objectives they've set for themselves. And so that's how I found a lot of success getting buy-in from senior leaders across my organization. And that's quite frankly how we got the funding for performance consulting. I explained what it was and how this is the process that will help us uncover the true causes of performance gaps in the organization that may or may not be training. Training doesn't solve every problem. You know, I said earlier in this conversation that one word answer for what my team does is training, but there's a lot more, there's a lot more that we can dig into beyond that. But I want to make sure that I'm really protecting the organization's resources, our time, our money, our people, all of that, by really only applying training if we're confident training is going to solve that problem. Because quite frankly, we're wasting everyone's time and resources if we're throwing training at problems that training can't solve. So performance consulting really helps us get to the heart of what is causing those gaps, identifying what barriers people face, what facilitates performance on the job, and making sure that we're only applying training if the problem is caused by a gap in skills or knowledge. And having those conversations has really shifted the focus in our business to giving us more space for analysis. Who in L&D doesn't want that? Because now they believe that we have a purpose behind our analysis and we're actually going out to uncover the causes of performance gaps. And then we can turn around and say, you know, actually we found there's some issues with access to technology. They don't have the right tools, or there's some issues, quite frankly, with culture or managerial support. People got training, but they don't feel like they actually had managerial support to actually change the way they're doing their jobs. Or we say, you know what? They don't really know what to do. We found that lack of skills or knowledge was the cause of the gap. So let's apply training. So it's helped us be a lot more prescriptive and specific in the support we offer. And it's helped the business see better results.
Yeah, awesome. And I think one thing to make clear is, like, obviously we're having this conversation largely through the lens of learning and development, because that's the world that both of us live in. But these are really important conversations for any team, you know, certainly any support team where there might be a lack of clarity in, you know, if you're a communications team, a marketing team, you know, where there's, you're not, different stakeholders are going to have different ideas of what you bring to the table. But then even if, you know, you're just like a production team and it's like your team's job is to make more widgets. It's like, okay, well, how are you going to make those widgets? What values do you have? What kind of people do you want on your team? These are all things that you can use these discussions, these conversations to drive alignment on. You mentioned earlier, you've hired a number of people. I think, I know I mentioned this in a previous conversation. I remember I was working on some hiring training for a company that I worked for previously. And one of the hiring managers came in and he told me that hiring is an admission that you were wrong, or an admission that you don't have the resources you need, right? Like, you've told your boss, like, hey, we're going to go do this thing. And now you've realized, oh, you can't do it with the resources you have. You need to go hire people. So just like you say, like, oh, we need more money or we need more time. People is just another resource that you're kind of talking about. You know, so once you've driven all this, it's very clear what you're doing, when you're doing it, why you're doing it. How do you decide that in order to do this stuff, you need another person or you need more people?
That's an interesting quote that you heard. You know, I don't think that's necessarily a negative thing. In my time as a hiring manager, I have seen growth on my team because, quite frankly, the business wants more of us. We were doing everything right.
And that's always the best reason.
That's fantastic. We want more of that. We're investing in you. And so, that's been a huge success for us, quite frankly. I think, again, this goes right back to that mission and vision. I had a manager tell me one time, hiring poorly is the most expensive mistake you can make. And I agree in that. And I think that every time you hire, it's an opportunity to really reassess, do I have the skills and the knowledge of my team to really carry that vision into reality? Do I have the skills, knowledge on my team to quite frankly, get the job done? And what gaps do I have? One of the practices I do with my team every single year is a SWOT analysis, that strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's very old school. Yeah. It's kind of tried and true, but it is because it works, honestly. And so every single year we do a SWOT analysis. And we found that some themes are true over time. Some new ideas emerge, of course, as the organization changes around us, as our team changes. And that really kind of helps me have that finger on the pulse of the current state of the union, let's just say. And I think about, you know, how this impacts everything from individual and team goals. You know, what are individuals going to be doing to seize opportunities, address weaknesses? What are we doing as a team in those factors? And then if I do get the chance to hire in the year ahead, what new talent or what new experience, what new perspective, what new skill can I bring onto the team that's going to help us seize those opportunities and close those weaknesses? And so that's how I always approach hiring.
I love that. I mean, it's very similar to, it's funny because I think in L&D, at least I've seen it, you know, we're always feeling, well, this isn't true just for learning and development. Everybody always says they don't have enough people. Right? You don't have enough people. You don't have enough time. That's just like the common thing. Just like everybody says, we need training. You know, like every problem is a training problem. Every problem is a hiring problem. And so just like with training, where we said we were trying to get people to be like, whoa, 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 what's the actual problem here? I think with hiring, it makes a lot of sense to, exactly like you're saying, you're doing a SWOT analysis to do it of like, no, let's not just like hire people just because we got authority to hire people. Let's make sure there's a problem here. I did want to go back really quickly to what you mentioned before of a lot of times you get into hire people because like the business is actively saying like we need more support. Have you been able to actively, like, do you actively foster that? Have you been able to kind of draw the connection of like somebody out in the business is saying they want your help and you're kind of like connect them with your boss or whoever has authority, you know, like, have you been able to get that whole thing to work? Cause I feel like that's the dream of any support team.
I am not shy about putting myself and my team on a pedestal.
Cool.
I'm just not. I think that this is something that, you know, culturally, whether you want to say a woman in the workplace, a woman in leadership in tech, whatever it may be, I have found I need to advocate for myself, and I have found that I need to advocate for my team. And luckily in my career, I have mostly had leaders who are very, very supportive of me and my team, and they recognize the good work that we're doing. But absolutely, I am not shy about identifying opportunities and going out and seizing them. There is a previous leader in our learning and development org who now has a more kind of traditional business role elsewhere in the business now. And that leader and I keep a regular sync on the calendar every couple months. We chat and catch up. And I'm always sharing success stories that, you know, things that my team was working on, because she's invested in my team. She knows us. She used to be one of our peers. And every so often, those conversations lead to her saying, you know what, there's a problem over in my part of the business. Can one of your consultants come in and help us solve our problem? Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and so I'm always really careful, again, to protect against scope creep, protect against roles and responsibilities. You know, I try and make really intentional choices, but I am not shy about volunteering myself and my team to what I consider to be a worthy cause that's going to help us get a little more recognition and have that bigger impact. And that can be everything from just, you know, kudos and accolades all the way through job security, honestly.
Yeah. I love, it's interesting the way you just mentioned that and the way this conversation has gone, because I feel like one of the things that you've kind of helped answer is the two needs that you have to have to kind of like create, you know, they're like bookends in terms of how do you create a team that gets a lot of work to propel it forward versus to collapse it. And that's the sense that there's lots of people out there. There's lots of leaders. I'll admit, I was one of these leaders who was just like, yes, we'll do that. Yes, we'll do that. I was out there talking to people. I was networking and I was like, yes, yes, yes. But then we just got overwhelmed and had way too much to do. And as a result, you're not really servicing anybody and nobody's happy with what you're doing. And that's because what I was missing, what I think a lot of leaders were probably missing, is that very clear mission, vision, scope of this is what we're doing. And so if you, once you have that firmly in place, then you can go out there and really, you know, shout from the rooftops the accolades, because you've made it clear, this is what we're capable of doing. This is what we focus on. And so if it starts to build beyond that, now you have a very true case of saying like, look, these people are asking for our help. We are trying to fit within these bounds. We do not have the resources to support them. Can you give us the resources so that we can support them? Does that all sound right?
No, it absolutely does. Yeah.
So then one thing that you mentioned there, you know, you briefly mentioned kind of this, you know, like woman in leadership, woman in tech idea about being very out front for female leaders who find themselves in these positions. I don't know, how have you personally kind of navigated that? Was that something, a skill that you had to teach yourself, or was that kind of just like natural to you of like, no, like, let's go team, let's do this?
You know, a little bit of both, honestly. Okay. I'm somebody who's just never been shy about getting up in front of others. I'm on a podcast right now. I began my career as a high school teacher, and getting up in front of a group of high schoolers is terrifying. And sure, I had those fears, but it's never prevented me. And so that's something that I've realized, that, you know, you always think about luck as sort of being the intersection of opportunity and being prepared. And so I've made sure to really prepare myself for those opportunities when they come up. So I'm not often afraid of opportunities, but it is something that I do try and definitely be mindful of. You know, I think oftentimes, and this may be a gendered female thing, it may not be, you know, we often expect the workplace to be a meritocracy. You know, well, if I just do good work, everyone will notice me. If I'm always chipping in, if I'm always raising my hand, everyone will notice me. And, you know, that's not always the case. And so, you know, I've been fortunate that a lot of coaches and mentors in my career have really coached me on this idea of having a personal brand. And it's more than just what you think of yourself. It's reliant on what others think of you, and how having that strong personal brand opens you up for opportunities. And so that's something that I think about with both myself and with my team, is what do we want to be known for? And quite frankly, another leader in my organization once asked me that, Laurel, what do you want to be known for? And that's a question that I go back and I ask my team time and time again, you know, what do we want to be known for? And so, you know, as our team has moved through reorgs across the business, you know, as we're going out and meeting with different partners who maybe haven't heard of us before, or they think, oh, that's just the team that makes the PowerPoints look pretty. And they don't realize how much work has really gone into the whole entire end-to-end lesson plan that PowerPoint is part of. You know, I always think about this notion of that personal brand. What do they think about us? And that gives me the courage to present myself and my team in the best light possible.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just one more reason to do this mission and vision work, because then it makes it easier yes. for you to go out and evangelize, because you know what you yes. want to say. You know what you want to celebrate. Yes. Interesting. That makes a lot of sense. As we close, I do want to take a moment to think about this. Again, there's so much reorganization happening right now. Sometimes that reorganization is shrinking, you know, or, you know, certain teams are taken out, and all of a sudden your team, you've done all this work. You have all this, like, this is what we want to be known for. This is our mission and vision. And then something happens, the company changes, and it's like, wow, your scope doubled, or you have half the number of people that you did yesterday. How do you manage that when all of a sudden the scope changes kind of outside of your control?
You know, it's funny, Matt, I don't think this is something that you and I had talked about before the call, but that's also an experience I've had as a leader. You know, I shared a story a few minutes ago about the good times when the business invested in us. And unfortunately, yeah. a few months ago, things went in the opposite direction and a few people on my team were impacted by layoffs. And so, yeah. you know, I really thought about a couple different things here. What is my role as the leader in this situation? What is my role as the manager and like an HR front and, you know, communicating information and, you know, wrapping up the end of their employment? But then also, what is my role as a leader? And I mentally invested in these people as much as the business financially invested in these people. Yeah. And so I wanted to do a couple things for both the people who were on my team still and the folks who unfortunately were exiting the company. And so for the people who are on my team, I've been very, very careful in the last several months to really protect them from scope creep, from expansions of their mm-hmm. roles and responsibilities. Because even though everyone who is still here is feeling a sense of relief that we are still here, there's still a bit of fear, quite frankly. You know, that sure. what does the future look like for us? You know, as there's reorganizations, will my role be changing? Yeah. You know, is my work changing? Yeah. Are the people who I've historically worked with, you know, maybe doing different things as well? And so I've really worked to bring clarity to the people that are still here and who are still invested in being here and supporting this mission. And then for the folks who've exited, I've really worked to help them find their next steps, you know, whether that's opening up to my network. I did a series of LinkedIn posts about each of them, sharing successes, sharing nice. Stories. Everyone who was in that situation did find interviews, you know, through my series of LinkedIn posts. Great. And they're all now gainfully employed. And so that, you know, they've all found success. Interestingly enough, where they all got interviews through my posts, they all found employment on their own without me, which I'm actually really proud of, because they did it all on their own. They didn't need me. I just helped get them a little practice and, you know, in re-interviewing after a couple of years. And, you know, it's such a trope that your people are your strongest asset, but they are, you know, and as much as I talk about the mission and vision, I'm reliant on all of them to carry this through, which is really why it was so important we write it together as a team. So it's not just my ideas and my directive, but ultimately mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I'm only as good as the people around me. I'm only as productive as the people around me. I really rely on all of them, you know, to get a lot of stuff done, where they rely on me for that vision and, you know, for that guidance and mentorship. And so it's a two-way street and we're all in this together. And I think ultimately we're all just working really hard to build and maintain a team environment that we all genuinely want to be part of.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's 100% right. And I love how you can tell you've spent a lot of time kind of thinking through all this stuff and practicing all of this stuff, because this all becomes a very consistent and self-reinforcing philosophy of, you know, the mission and vision isn't just about like being more productive. It's making it so that you can celebrate your people better, celebrate your team better. It's so that you can protect your people when things go bad. It's so that you know how to, you better know your people so that you can better support them when it's time to move on. it all fits really well together, which I can tell is, you know, why I know you personally have a lot of investment in this idea of leading better learning teams, you know, not just doing the work better or showing the ROI, all that kind of stuff, but it's like, how do we lead learning teams? What does that look like? Which is something, yeah, like I said, I know you write about and talk about. So for specifically on that, what are better ways, how should people find you if they want to hear more about that? If they like what they've heard, want to hear a little bit more about that message, where should people find you?
Well, thank you so much. I invite anyone listening to connect with me or follow me on LinkedIn. And I've also had the great fortune to publish a white paper through ATD, the Association for Talent Development. It was published last year, June of 2023, and it's titled The A-List L&D Team Assemble. And it covers a lot of the topics that we talked about today, and really that intersection of where L&D meets leadership and how to lead the learning function in your organization.
Excellent. Well, everybody should definitely check that out. We will put links both to your LinkedIn and to that white paper down below in the comments so people can find it easily. Laurel, this has been great. I think there's a lot. We've touched on this idea of mission vision before in some podcasts, but really briefly, this is the first time where we've kind of dove this deeply into it, which was I really appreciate. So thank you so much for being here. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, and same to you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. If you are looking for help turning your organization's great engineers into great managers, me and my team at Better Everyday Studios would love to help. We deliver targeted and interactive training workshops that are designed to help build the three fundamental skills of any new manager: building trust, giving feedback, and setting goals. Reach out to me through matt@bettereverydaystudios.com so we can start making your organization better every day.